From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Cuba denounces exile moves to keep 6-year-old Elian Gonzalez in Miami. Why regional travel agents are angry with American Airlines and the telephone expansion advanced as a reason for keeping rates high. I'm Ken Richards and this is BBC Caribbean Report. In the Elian Gonzalez case, while legal experts in the U.S. argue over the implications of Monday's ruling, the actions of the exiles in Miami trying to keep him from returning to Cuba have been denounced in Havana, and the highly organized Send Back Elian rallies have become a daily feature on the island. The crowds, mostly of school children, are bussed in at 5 o'clock every afternoon, usually to a specially built stage outside the U.S. entry section. Tom Gibb is monitoring the daily protests.
At the latest rally, student leader Hassan Perez fiercely denounced the most recent ruling by a Miami judge issuing a temporary protection order for Elian on the request of his Miami relatives. Hassan Perez said it was another dirty trick from what he called the Miami mafia of Cuban-American leaders running the campaign for Elian to stay. Many ordinary Cubans are now getting tired of the whole issue. There are dozens of jokes about Elian on the streets, but most think he should be returned to his father and grandparents. The images of Elian being wrapped in a U.S. flag by Cuban-American leaders, which have been played repeatedly on state television, have struck a nationalist chord here. There's little sympathy for Miami's leaders.
They are not defending a good cause. Elian belongs to Cuba. This is his country. We are going to win at the end because this is a just case.
Many people is indignant because he lives in Cuba. This is his people, his country, his president, everything.
For his part, Fidel Castro appears confident he's on to a winner, whether Elian is sent back quickly or not. U.S. public opinion and the U.S. administration are, for once, on his side, arguing for the boy's return.
Tom Gibb in Havana. The exiles may regard the latest court decision in the Elian Gonzalez case as a tactical victory for them, but Democratic Congressman Charles Rangel says the interest of the boy is what should take priority. He favors Elian being returned to Cuba. Congressman Rangel told me that a child who has just lost his mother shouldn't be deprived of the love of his father.
There's no question in my mind, as a former federal prosecutor, that no local elected domestic court judge can supersede an order from a federal agency. The truth of the matter is, however, that the immigration order was not firm, and they have broad discretion as to when the appropriate time would be to return the boy to his father, and they may want to get a federal court to make that ruling, but in my opinion, it's not necessary.
Senator Smith says Elian told him he doesn't want to live. If that's the case, why shouldn't the boy's feelings be taken into consideration?
With all due respect to the United States Senator, I just don't know what type of a dialogue he has with a 6-year-old kid that speaks only Spanish. That cannot be a serious question as to what dictates what the United States of America obligation really would be.
What about the exile's claim that his mother gave up her life so that he could have a better life? Are you not swayed emotionally by this?
Of course I'm swayed emotionally. I'm swayed emotionally about the lives of Mexican-Americans that seek a better way of life. The Haitians that lost their lives in shark-infested waters. But we are a nation of laws, and if we decided to be guided by emotion because of the charm and love for this kid, then I would suspect that anybody in Cuba should just put their kids on rafts and hope that some may survive and reach Florida and find a better way of life.
Was Dr. Castro's whipping up so much anti-American sentiment in Havana helpful? Wouldn't the exiles be determined that he wouldn't rub their noses in it?
I truly believe that a lot of people are whipped up because they love the kid and want the kid home with his father. These demonstrations in Havana and Miami has nothing to do with the welfare of this child. So you can wave the Cuban flags in Havana and American flags in Miami, but really good voices ought to come forward and say, enough of this. The child has been through enough. and should be taken home. And then we can continue this silly foreign policy of having a illegal, immoral, unconstitutional embargo on Cuba. And we can do this as grown people with silly, inane foreign policy, but we should not include children and have them suffer as a result of it.
U.S. Congressman Charles Rangel, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. Regional travel agents are up in arms over what a senior official of the Caribbean Association of Travel Agents called a rude notice from American Airlines. The notice, faxed to travel agents across the Caribbean, explains that the airline is cutting by one-third, from 6 to 9%, the commission it pays to travel agents. Lou Smith reports.
Siddiqui Sylvester is a vice president of Qatar and a president of the Grenada chapter. He says the reaction of regional travel agents is to institute a boycott of American Airlines, which means they'll not be writing any tickets for people who intended to travel on AA, America's second largest carrier. That boycott, he says, takes effect on Sunday. The agents plan to meet in Trinidad over the coming weekend, but for now, Mr. Siddiqui says, the situation is one regional travel agents cannot live with.
We hope that American Airlines would realize that the decision is definitely something that the Caribbean travel agents at this time cannot live with. We believe that there may be alternative approaches that we would like to explore with American Airlines. They have not said this to us. Even I think the American Airlines employees in most of the islands, including some of the managers, were surprised by the move. And we would just like to sit down with them and see what alternative measures can be implemented to avoid the crisis that the travel agencies in the region would experience.
American Airlines hasn't made any public statement on the issue, but airline sources say the move could well be a cost-saving measure. But Mr. Siddiqui says that as far as he knows, AA is making profit in the Caribbean. Almost three-quarters of the people traveling on American Airlines to and from the Caribbean book their flights through travel agents. The regional travel agents are now waiting to see what AA's next move will be.
We have other measures that we, of course, would implement based upon the response of American Airlines. Maybe at the moment they may find that it is not hurting them sufficiently to respond to us, but we hope that very soon they will respond and this matter could be resolved very quickly.
The weekend meeting in Port of Spain will discuss further moves, but all for now, the boycott of American Airlines by Caribbean travel agents is on. For BBC Caribbean Report, I am Lou Smith in St. George's.
The Guyana Telephone and Telegraph Company has been explaining its side of the story in the telephone rates dispute with AT&T. The access fees dispute led to the international service offered the Guyana company by AT&T being cut off earlier this month because the local company refused to accept a lower rate for the calls. The chairman of Atlantic Tele Network and the Guyana Telephone and Telegraph Company, Cornelius Pryor, told me there was no need for the two sides to be blaming each other over the dispute.
When two companies agree to stop sending traffic to each other, or they agree to stop selling to each other for reasons about price, then both companies, in effect, are canceling the contract, and that's exactly what happened here. AT&T took the initiative. They gave us notice in 1998 that the contract would end on December 31, 99, and they followed that up in December 99 with a final statement that they are expecting us to terminate the direct circuits between our companies. So we acted as they knew we would and as they asked us to shut down our half of the circuits, and they shut down their half of the circuits.
So as far as you're concerned, is it goodbye AT&T, or can the matter be resolved?
We do not intend to reduce the accounting rate as AT&T has been urging us to do. MCI is perfectly willing to send us traffic at the old accounting rate. If AT&T insists on its views of the price, I don't think that we are going to jeopardize our customers in Guyana by reducing the price, because these international inbound traffic calls provide a subsidy for the local people who would otherwise have to make up the difference between what is paid for incoming international calls and otherwise.
the growing world trend has been towards cutting phone rates. Why is Guyana exempt from this?
Guyana is not exempt from these trends. These trends are knocking at our door, and AT&T's action is a specific example of the effort that is being made to do that. What some people forget is that in the United States, where this effort to reduce international rates is probably the strongest right now, the U.S. has other mechanisms in place to provide subsidies to local rural telephone companies. They have in the United States something that is called the Universal Service Fund, in which all long-distance companies in the U.S. contribute an amount of money, and that money is paid to the small rural telephone companies who basically don't have the economic activity that the major cities and the international callers do. And so there is a subsidy that is paid in the United States through something called the Universal Service Fund. In the international world, you don't have an international government that can order people to pay subsidies so that the poor countries, like Guyana, can gradually increase their infrastructure.
Cornelius Pryor. In the Bahamas, there have been delays in an inquest into the suicide of death row prisoner John Higgs. The hearings were postponed today for 2 weeks until the country's superintendent of prisons returns to Nassau to give his evidence. Debbie Nash reports on today's proceedings, day three of the inquest.
Before Coroner Winston Saunders adjourned today's inquest into the circumstances surrounding the death last week of convicted inmate John Higgs, evidence from a local attorney added to the growing number of contradictions emerging from this investigation. Previous evidence from several prison officers who had been on special assignment to watch Higgs in the days preceding his death had testified that cell checks revealed unremarkable behavior from the condemned man, who was set to be hanged within the next 2 days. When Deputy Superintendent Julian of Fox Hill Prison was recalled to the stand, he confirmed that under no circumstances are prison officers to go into a prison cell if it is a suspected crime scene. The coroner asked him if he would be surprised to learn that earlier testimony by some prison officers has revealed that they entered the Higgs cell the night of his death. "I'd say I'm surprised," came his reply, and then an explanation, quote, "But you have to understand, we have some weak ones. They're not sure what they're doing. They don't even know they're breaking the law," end quote. The hearing is adjourned until Thursday. This is Debbie Nash in Nassau for BBC Caribbean Report.
Canadian immigration officials have been shedding more light on the issue of Dominican economic passports, but they've stopped short of saying whether the island's passport holders will be hit by restrictions following the recent arrest of a group of Chinese with Dominican passports. Officials in Roseau say there have been misleading reports over whether Canada will slap visa restrictions on them or not. Orin Gordon reports.
The way things work at the moment is that Dominicans can enter Canada without visas because they're on a list of countries that Canada has exempted from its visa requirement. Guyana and Jamaica are not exempted, for example, because there's a much higher risk that the holder of the visa will overstay the period, even immigrate illegally. The Dominican passport, in other words, is a document that Canadian immigration respects. Will the arrest of the Chinese now mean that Canada will take Dominica off the list of countries that are visa-exempt? Lorna Taffier, a spokeswoman for Canadian immigration, was non-committal.
It is a possibility. There's a number of things that we look at when we exempt a country from the visa requirement, that there is a low incidence of enforcement problems. Now, by enforcement difficulties, I mean that the country does cooperate in the removal of persons who are not admissible to Canada. There's a low incidence of visas being used by illegal migrants. In the case of Dominica, at this point in time, we're simply monitoring the situation, and we'll continue to pursue discussions with the Dominica authorities.
The Dominican government says Canada hasn't officially notified them about any reservations they may have about the economic citizenship program. The finance minister, Julius Timothy, says Dominica won't take the approach of Belize to Canadian concerns about economic citizenship.
The Belizean officials outrightly ignored Canada. As a result, Canada imposed visa restrictions on Belize. If the Canadian authorities have a problem, we would expect them to complain to us and we would get involved in whatever negotiations there are.
There is concern in Roseau and among Dominican nationals generally that Dominicans won't be able to travel as freely to and from Canada as they're used to. They'll know for sure once the Canadian government has completed its examination of the issue and it gets in touch with Roseau.
Orin Godden, and that's it for BBC Caribbean Report. Just a reminder that
this and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
Join us from 11:05 GMT tomorrow for our next morning programs. I'm Ken Richards, saying goodbye from London.